This episode is supported by Manscaped. Manscaped have kindly agreed to sponsor the podcast from the 1st of January to the 31st of January. Between these dates, you can use our promo code GTM to receive 20% off products and free worldwide shipping. January is a great time to get on these products as they have a massive January sale. If you've not heard of Manscaped before, then add a leading company in male grooming fitting in around your family jewels. Manscaped have kindly sent me their Perfect Package 3.0. In this package, you've received their Lawnmower 3.0, which is a trimmer perfectly designed for your nether regions, so you no longer have to worry about snagging the bag. As a listener of Going The Match, you get 20% off and free worldwide shipping with our promo code GTM. Head over to www.manscaped.com to grab yourself an absolute bargain.
Welcome back to the Going The Match podcast. Today I'm joined by football expert Julian Laurens. Julian has been working in football media for many years now, including BT Sport, ESPN, Five Live and the Totally Football Show. He's also a massive PSG fan. Julian, thanks for giving me your time today, mate, and coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, so I want you to take us back to your childhood. Where were you born and how did your love for Paris Saint-Germain begin?
I was born in Paris in the 12th arrondissement, which is Bastille for the listeners who know the capital, the city. Like pure Parisian family, you know, and my dad already was a PSG fan. So it took me really young. I think my first game was 84, I think, in the UEFA Cup against Videoton. So not that I remember it or not. I don't think anyone remembers because I don't think it was a very good game, but yeah, that's where he was. I think the difference between Paris and I guess a lot of other big cities like yours, like Liverpool, is that we only have one team. When I was growing up, there was Matra Racing, who, by the way, my dad worked for. Despite being a PSG fan, but they were great for a time and signed all those great players, and then they disappeared completely because money wasn't there. So, and since we've had teams like Red Star, like Paris FC, who are in second division, third division, but nothing as big as, you know, two huge teams in the same city. So maybe that's why it was just Paris. It could have only been Paris anyway, PSG, to be fair. So yeah, so then I went to stadium with my dad, and then later on when I was old enough and big enough, I could go, I was allowed to go with my friends. And then working as a journalist, you know, I try to stay objective as much as I can, although even sometimes I'm not on purpose, you know, for the job to be a bit of a spokesperson and thing, because I think it's fun to do it that way. But yeah, the love for the club, I just kept growing and growing and growing and growing. Even when they were bad and they had no money, I was there. I was there at Sochaux when they almost went down to the second division in that season, so 07-08 season. So yeah, I was there in good times, like it is now, great times like it is now, but also in really bad times.
So have you got any memories of being a kid going to watch PSG? And, you know, I think with every podcast I've done, the amount of people that have said going upstairs and seeing the ground for the first time, do you still have those memories now?
Yeah, the first real memory, I think it was the Juventus game, maybe in 88 or 89, something like that. Before that, I've got flashes, but nothing, you know, I don't remember goals, for example, but that game, I remember the goals and everything. And then some iconic games where either I was watching on television, but being there for the PSG Barcelona game, for example, in 95 in the Champions League was incredible. I mean, it was not the best of Barca team, but it was certainly an incredible PSG team with Ginola and Wea and Rai and Guérin and all that. They had French internationals. They had top world-class foreign players as well. It was a great period in the history of the club. And I was 13, 14, 15 in those years. And being able to go to the Paris France on my own as well, because I was old enough then. To watch that team, those players. I mean, Ginola was just incredible to watch as a 15-year-old or 14-year-old. So yeah, those moments are very much there. Before that, nothing until I was 9. And then from 9 to 12, it's a bit blurry. Yeah. And then 12 onwards, it's great memories.
So who would your heroes would have been growing up? Then it'd be people like George Weah and, like you say, Ginola. Would they have been your heroes then?
Yeah, Ginola was really was the one for me. And then I was lucky enough to work with him as well on BT Sport and things like that and know him. I was playing as a winger at the time when I was like under 13.
Yeah.
And you know, that he was the best. He was so elegant, he was so beautiful to watch. all the skills, the pace, and then you wanted to do the same, you know, when you were playing on Sunday mornings, Sunday afternoons with your club. So he was one, and you know, I would just watch him, and you know, despite Rai and Wea and all the other talent that team had, there were games where I would go only for him, really, because
the idol.
Oh yeah, and it was those years, and even then when he moved to Newcastle after the 95 season. That was his best years, really. And I think he was so good. And he was, although he was not from Paris, he was from the South, believe it or not, and came from the West. But he was, yeah, he had something special. He very much felt like he was one of ours when he wasn't really. But yeah, there was that sort of relationship between the Parc des Princes and him that was very special.
So I've actually done PSG away before and been to the Parc des Princes. Yeah, when Liverpool played there in 2018.
Oh, yeah.
I've got to say, the Liverpool's the team that actually won the Champions League that year. So, and to be honest, I wasn't really sure what to expect going there. But I was pleasantly surprised. I love Paris. I think it's a great city. It's expensive on the beer. But
yeah, of course.
it's a great city. And you know, that stadium, it was fantastic. And I look back now and I think, something that people probably perceive with PSG, because they've got money now, that they haven't got an atmosphere, and they almost seem to be this money ball club, and they haven't got that, when in actual fact, that's not the case. And it was one of the best grounds, one of the best atmospheres I've been in. And then on the flip side too, I went to the game at Anfield when we played them. And they're some of the best away fans I've seen come to Anfield, if not the best. So do you, in your opinion, would you say that, because of the money and the Qatari money that's come in, that atmosphere for the fans and the ultras that you have there almost gets not looked at and considered?
Yes, I think you're making a really good point. I feel like that it's a young club. Although there was football in Paris before, I get a lot of stick from people saying, oh, but you know, your club is a day older than Alan Shearer and that kind of stuff. And I get it and I take it, no problem. It's fine. Not everybody can be like Notts County, you know. But
yeah.
But it's always, not always, but certainly since I was going to the ground, you know, it was always a very intimidating atmosphere. Mm. And to the point that we had loads of troubles between our own fans. You know, we had fans dying, fans fighting with each other. So it was very toxic at times, to the point that we had a big plan to sort of like shift completely the atmosphere. You could not see it in your normal seat. We used to have those two cups, Boulogne on one side, Auteuil on the other one. They tried to they dismantled them in a way because it got too toxic and too violent. So it's a long story. Not that we can do the whole pod about that, but it's a long story between PSG and the fans, especially the ultras.
Yeah,
but they were always great fans amongst them, you know. And I think what we've seen in the latest years now, since the ultras have been allowed back into the ground, is that kind of atmosphere where, you know, there's a lot of flares, and flares are not allowed. So the clubs have been paying a lot of fines, but that brings a lot of character, I think, to the stadium, which, as you said, is a beautiful stadium because it's so central and you know, it's almost on the ring road that we have in Paris, the Périphérique, and all of that. I think it's beautiful, and I'm obviously biased, but also, if you saw the reaction from the fans after the Dortmund game last season, when the game was behind closed doors, the second leg of the last 16, where they had to win that game to qualify, and that communion between the ultras who were around the stadium at the at the bottom on the streets, and then the players who were on one of the balconies, and just that communion was something very, very special, and I really believe that really spurred on the players for the final eight in Lisbon, for the rest of the competition and all of that, although it was probably not very safe with COVID at the time already. But still, there's that relationship between ultras. And it's been a rocky relationship between the fans and the clubs. You know, I was at the training ground one day when fans were really unhappy in that season 07-08 where they were really bad and almost went down, where they were throwing stones at the cars, and it was really bad. But this is a club that is really, really loved by its ultras, and I think they're a very, very important part. And you're right, I think some people say to me, oh, it's a plastic club, you know, blah 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 blah. Well, no, it's not. And if you'd been there, or if you just wanted to know a bit more about the club, you would know that it's not.
Yeah, is that probably then quite annoying for you being a PSG fan? Obviously, you've supported them from a young age, you know, when they didn't have the Qatari money and stuff, and people do perceive them to be almost like Man City. You know, I think Man City probably do get a bit of a bad rep for not having an atmosphere like Liverpool. And like you say, I'm probably biased, but like you say, unless you actually go to PSG and you experience it and see what the atmosphere is like, you probably would have this perception in your head that there isn't an atmosphere just because they've got money, but that just isn't the case, is it?
No, it's not the case. You're right. I mean, the atmosphere at the Parc des Princes, and in a way, you're right, is incredible. And, you know, there's not many clubs in France, for example, who have huge away support in the country, but they do every time they go and they fill all the away space that they're given. Sometimes it's 1,000, sometimes it's a bit more. It depends, but they're always there. And yeah, unless you've been or you, but I think it's easy for people who don't like, you know, don't like PSG, who don't like what Qatar are doing with their money, which I can understand. It's fine. That's why it's not that I'm not bothered, but I think with age, I sort of like, okay, there's haters and they will hate. I've got no problem with that. And then people who actually want this kind of discussion, and I can tell them about what it was like in the 80s.
Yeah,
you know, I'm happy to, and maybe that would change the perception of the club, and that would be great if it does. It's like a few people are saying to me, oh, those shirts, PSG shirts, they're amazing. Now I want to like the club, but I don't really want to because of Qatar, because of the money, because it's a state club, and I get it. But it's funny to see, and then people said to me, oh, the shirts are amazing. I had to buy one, and you know, and now I feel a bit like a fan. You know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah. And same with Poch. When Poch was appointed, I had a lot of people on Twitter saying, oh, I have to love PSG now because Poch is so likable and Poch is so good and Poch is this and that. So it will change. Hopefully one day it will change. But just on that, it was funny because I met my wife here in London and she's Welsh. And she never bothered with PSG. But one day we went to Paris to see my family and I said, let's go to the Parc des Princes together. So I got tickets and it was a game against Bordeaux. One, it was 0-0. So she was like, she was dying. It was like, okay, is there anything happening soon? This is probably 04, 05. And then the ultras, because of the relationship they had with the club, and the clubs already were thinking about dismantling them, they were on strike that game. So there was the fans were there, but no singing, no chanting, no encouragement, nothing. And she was like, is it always like this? What's happening here? And I was like, no, I tried to explain. So that was a disaster. It was an absolute disaster. I was trying to score brownie points by saying like, I was trying to score, you know, brownie points, say like, yeah, come, it's great. It's an amazing stadium. This is my club. This is, you know, and then it was a complete failure, disaster. I was like, oh my God, she's never been again.
So you brought up Pochettino there. Obviously, Thomas Tuchel's recently been sacked. You brought Pochettino in, and PSG just got to the Champions League final, just gone. How would you sort of assess Tuchel's spell at PSG, and what are your thoughts on Pochettino coming in now?
I think I like Thomas Tuchel. I liked him from the beginning. I knew obviously what he did in Germany at Mainz and at Dortmund before. But I was always a bit skeptical about if he could handle that dressing room, because I never really thought he had the personality for it. And to be fair, he did quite well in his management with that team. The players liked him a lot.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between being liked by your players and still having them play the way you want, having the tactics that you want, which I think he gave up quite early and maybe quite easily, in the sense that he had those ideas and he's a very, very good tactician. And yet, I think he felt like, okay, I've got two of the best players in the world in Neymar and Mbappe, and I can't really fit them in my tactical system. So, you know what? I'm going to leave what I want to do tactically to just do what's kind of simple is, okay, let's build everything around them too. You can give them the ball, they can work their magic, and then hopefully that would work and we can tweak things. And that's what he did. And I think it got him some success, of course, because as you said, there's domestically they won and there's that Champions League final that he could have easily won.
Yeah.
You know, you can play it again. If Mbappe scored that big chance just before halftime, I think we win it. But in the end, we didn't win it, so it doesn't matter. But certainly this season, there was a sense that the performances, when it was not good football, And I think there's a sense from the Qatari that, okay, we spent all that money, we've got all those players, we have to play good football, we have to play well. And that was not the case. Okay. You lost to Marseille in the league at home for the first time in 11 years. You lost to Lyon in the league at home for the first time in 13 years. And I think all those things together, plus the very stormy Champions League group stage that almost, you didn't almost make it to the last 16. You did in the end, but you could have easily not done. Yeah. I think it was a bit too much, and they felt this is the time, if we don't sack him now for the Christmas break, the winter break, and can bring someone in, they knew it was going to be Pochettino anyway, because they had planned that before. This is now or never, and they really wanted it, and that's what happened. I can see why he's brutal and why people were like, wow, Christmas Eve, you just won 4-0, they're in the Champions League, they're only a point behind the leader in Ligue 1, but I think there was too many factors that made it inevitable that he was going to get the sack.
How do you feel about Pochettino now? And do you think he'll be able to sort of not tame, but be able to watch over those personalities of Neymar's and Mbappe's of the world? Do you reckon he'll be able to cope with that?
Yes, yeah, so that's a question, I guess. It could be similar, although it's a very different personality to Tuchel, you know. But first, on his return, I mean, I watched him play, I don't know how many times, you know, as a PSG captain. So I think it's very, very different when one of your own or one of your former players, because he only stayed 2.5 years. So it's not like, you know, when Stevie G is going to come back to manage Liverpool, this is going to be huge. Mm. So this is not that scale, but it's still, you know, there's a few similarities of one of your own, who was your club captain, who was loved by the fans, who loved the club loved him back. For him to come back 20 years on, almost to the day when he first signed, I think there was a sense of destiny there. For me, it was great. Everybody was quite buzzing, quite happy. But you're right, there are question marks over can he implement his ideas to this dressing room, again, similar to Tuchel. Although, like I've been saying in France a lot, this is a very different personality to Tuchel. He's far more political, more manipulative in many ways than Tuchel was. Tuchel, as he said just before getting the sack, he only wanted to coach. And he said in Paris, you can't do that because this is a club that is more than just football. There's a lot of politics, it's true. There's a lot of influences everywhere. There's a lot of, you know, movements and stuff. And it's hard. If you just want to be a coach like Thomas Tuchel, I'm not sure this is for you. However, if you want something a bit bigger like Poch wants, because Poch, I think, wants bigger thing than just being a coach. If one day Poch wants to be a success at Real Madrid, he needs to have that in him. In Real Madrid, you just don't go to coach. It doesn't work like that. And I think that's why I think he's a bit more suited to the job. But it's true. You know, will Neymar run as much as Poch wants him to? Will Kylian Mbappe be as disciplined and as listening as what Poch wants him to do? I'm not convinced yet. So, you know, I'm not sure if that would be the case, if they would be willing to listen to do everything that he says. I think he might have to adapt a little bit. I don't know if the high press and really aggressive press that we saw under him at Spurs would work with those players. He's tried to do it. We saw it against Brest at the weekend, for example. It was a bit, the coordination wasn't great, and it was a bit like too pressing high and intensity, and then the others behind were a bit behind.
Yeah,
I think there's something there. So let's hope because what would you not want to? If you're Neymar and Mbappe and you've got a new coach, someone like him with great charisma, who's been there before at that club, although a lot of things have changed since. But why would you not want to listen? And if he says to you, listen, we can win the Champions League, but let's try this way, by doing this a bit differently, by, you know, being higher up on the pitch, pressing higher, that intensity, the counter press, recovering the ball, this and that. Why would you not try?
I think you make a great comparison there with Gerrard potentially coming back to Liverpool. And it almost seems a bit of a trend now with football clubs. You've got Lampard at Chelsea. Like you say, Gerrard maybe coming to Liverpool. You almost feel like maybe Thierry Henry is in the MLS now. He might come back and manage Arsenal one day.
Yeah, Zidane.
Given, you know, Pochettino coming to PSG, I think you probably get a little bit more time and you almost get the fans on side for a little bit longer by having an ex-player and having that previous relationship. So, you know, but touching back what you said then, a lot of people may not be really into PSG that much. If you can see that he's bringing a personality onto the pitch in a relationship, people might start to get behind it a little bit more outside of PSG fans, potentially.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's a really good point. And I think he will get that. I think he will get the next 6 months, whatever happened. One, because you arrived halfway through the season. You know, first training session was January the 3rd. First game was January the 6th. Then there was another game 3 days later. And then tonight, as we're recording this on Wednesday, there's the French Super Cup against Marseille as well, the big rivals tonight. So already it's like right in the middle of it. Brilliant. So I think the next 6 months will be, whatever happens, it'll be fine. Mm. After that, then you really expect things to kick on and him to now be settled and have adapted and, you know, has put his message across and everything. And then you can really see it. But yeah, you're right. It's a bit of that. Yeah. And like you said as well, I think Poch can bring a sort of a different appeal to the club now because of what he did in England before, even in Spain, I guess, to a certain extent. And with Tuchel, it was very different. And Tuchel is quite cold. You know, he's quite serious. And he was fun at times, but he was still very much... Poch is a bit different. You know, this is the Latin vibe, and this is it, and it's very... So, yeah, hopefully... I mean, I don't agree with people saying, oh, Tuchel was a mistake or Emery was a mistake. You know, they try things, they brought things. Yeah, of course, in the end, it was maybe not what they wanted because they wanted the Champions League. And that's what the club is after. That's the Holy Grail. And a bit like Liverpool with the Premier League 30 years on. I don't know how long it would take them to get there.
Yeah.
I really hope that one day they will get there. But so, yeah, of course, Emery and Tuchel in the end, because there was no Champions League triumph, were disappointing. But I don't think it was a mistake. And now let's see what Poch is. But hopefully it won't be a mistake and it'll be a success.
So I can't have you on the podcast without talking about Kylian Mbappe.
I knew that was coming.
Outside the Liverpool, he's my favourite player, and he has been for a long time now. So you're going to tell if there's any truth in the links between Mbappe and Liverpool? And I mean, on a serious note, do you think that Mbappe would work well under this Liverpool team under Klopp?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great talking point. The fact that he really likes and he's a big fan of what Klopp is doing and what Liverpool Football Club means, what it represents, the recent successes, of course, as well. It would have been different 10 years ago. But right now, certainly, there's no doubt that he would be really keen. Can Liverpool afford him right now? I don't think so. I haven't looked in details at the numbers and the figures and the state of the club financially. But in the summer... Even if he doesn't extend at PSG, and let's remind everyone that his contract in Paris finishes on June 2022. So this summer, there will be only 1 year left if he hasn't extended by then. But even that, it will still be around 200 and 250 million euros in the whole package in terms of wages, commissions, transfer fee, everything you want. So can Liverpool pay that this summer? I don't think so. Not in this current context, not with the pandemic. I'm not even sure they can afford a defender this January, so let alone Kylian Mbappe in 6 months' time, especially if fans don't come back, which looks more and more unlikely now. So that's the thing. But if they could afford him, and if they can at some point, because again, what people have to and stop telling me or asking me is, it's okay if Kylian Mbappe extends his deal in Paris and stays for a couple of years. He will only be 24.
Yeah.
You know, he's only still so young that, you know, at 22, he can still spend another year or two in Paris and try to get the Champions League back home and all of that. And then he can go to Liverpool for 4 years and still yet be 28 to go to Real Madrid, for example. You know, anything. There's no rush. And it's not a failure for Liverpool if they don't sign him this month or in the summer or even the following summer. It can wait. But I think that one day, certainly there will be a possibility if the money is there. Same with Real Madrid. Would he work in that team? Now we're talking because, you know, I've had people saying, oh, he's overrated. He's this, that. He's not overrated. He's an incredible talent. But he's got to improve. You know, if he really wants to be a center forward, as in a proper center forward, playing in that central position, he will have to work on holding up the ball and his movement and his first touch and a lot of that. You know, he needs to stop maybe thinking at times that he can dribble past the whole opposition team, because that's only Messi can do that, you know, and less now. So, you know, sometimes I still think that he wants to win the game on his own, and that's counterproductive. So there's a lot of room for improvement there. With Klopp improving 100%, Would Klopp want to work with him? 100%. I think he would be amazing in that team, I have to say. But this is a team that would have to work a bit differently. If he replaces Salah or Mane or Firmino, you don't work the same as the current front three, of course. So, but I mean, I think it would be amazing to see him at Liverpool one day. The later, as late as possible, please leave him with us a little bit longer in Paris. But then, yeah, I think it's inevitable that he would play for Real Madrid one day, probably, that there's a chance he would play for Liverpool, of course, and maybe others as well. I don't know, but what a talent he is. And I don't get people saying he's overrated.
Yeah, I always get these people every time. Like, it's probably me more wanting it than it actually happening. I've always said to some of my mates, the United fans, Everton fans, like, oh, Mbappe won't come to Liverpool, you can't afford him, da da da. But you make a great point there that he's so young that he can come to, you know, he can potentially win the Champions League at PSG, then come to Liverpool, win the Premier League, do whatever in Europe for Liverpool, and then make the move that he really wants to, go to Real Madrid. And spend, you know, plenty of years there. You look at Ronaldo, he's been around all the different leagues. Yeah,
it's very similar, you're right.
And you know, there's no reason why he couldn't come to Liverpool. And, you know, and that he's probably got aspirations of being the next best thing. Of course he does.
Yeah.
And you look at Ronaldo, he's done it in different leagues. And he might look at, I know he looks up to Ronaldo a lot, doesn't he? So
yeah, he does, yeah.
He probably thinks of this very similar thing, doesn't he? So I don't think there's any reason why he couldn't expand his career as people think.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it's quite fascinating because, you know, if you're PSG, you're in a position where of the priority, and they're saying it even before thinking about Messi or any other recruitment, is to extend the deals of Neymar, who expired at the same time as Mbappe's, and Kylian's as well. And the Qatari is saying, like, even if they don't extend, or even if Kylian doesn't extend, there's no way we would sell him next summer, and then, and so that what that means, that then you're going to let him go for free in the summer 2022. I mean, that would be crazy. This surely would be the biggest player we've ever had on a free, you know, at his prime, or like, you know, at such a that kind of age. So it's quite fascinating to see what will happen. They seem to be quite confident in Paris, certainly what they're saying, that both Neymar and Mbappe want to stay, or at least want to extend. You can also extend now and still leave in 2022. You know, it's just that you don't leave your club with nothing, which I want to think that Mbappe, as a Paris-born and bred kid, you know, this is his hometown, this is his home club. I don't think he would want to just leave the club with nothing.
Yeah.
So what the way I see it is he will extend maybe just one more year, or maybe even just two more years. Doesn't have to extend for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then he will know that in 2022, for example, they will say, okay, We will say the price is 150, and then whoever brings that, you'll be allowed to go, or something like that. That kind of agreement, I think, is very realistic, very possible, that we leave Mbappe for another 18 months with the club being sure that there will be some money coming in when he wants to go. And again, I think we all know in Paris that he's not going to stay there the whole career. As much as we would love him to be our Maldini or our Steven Gerrard, we know that it's not possible. It won't happen. So, and I completely understand why. So, but if we know, okay, this is the plan, he extends, he stays for another 18 months or 2 years, whatever, and then he can go, and then he will be even better, and he will be even bigger and stronger, and he can make you very happy in Liverpool, and make people at the Bernabeu very happy or whatever, then so be it. But I really want to believe, and that's me always being positive and maybe a bit naive, I guess, but want to, that's a very possible outcome.
He'd make me very happy. Obviously, for yourself, you've been involved in football media for many years now, and you will have interviewed players, managers of different sorts. Who's been your favourite interview you've done, and why?
Well, that's a good one. I mean, I was lucky enough to interview Diego Maradona when he was the Argentina manager. It was not a one-on-one. It was with a little group of journalists, but still, I mean, Yeah, I was just sat there. I was in awe completely, so much admiration. He had so much charisma and everything. I mean, I always tell the story that when Argentina, with him as a head coach, played France in Marseille in a friendly in 2009, Le Parisien, the newspaper I used to work for, sent me over because I could speak Spanish. Well, I still can. And I stayed 4 days in their hotel, which was not just closed for them. It was open. Lovely place as well. And just follow them, every day for 4 days until the game. And it was incredible just to be around that team, you know, not super close, but still around, seeing everybody, like seeing how the players, including Messi and Aguero, were waiting outside the room where they had lunch or dinner for Maradona to arrive. I mean, he was always late. No one said anything. And then, but they could not go in until he was the first one to go in. And then he would stand at the door and they would all like give him a kiss and hug him. Like it was like father and all the children. It was amazing. And I remember that training session where he was there with his cigar and they were doing free kicks and he had the cigar in his mouth and they would give him the ball and he would just hit the free kick. I don't know, 20 yards, top corner, cigar, top corner, puffing on the cigar. It was just, I was like this. I was, oh my God, I swear to you, man, it was amazing. And so that was strong. And I was lucky enough to interview Zinedine Zidane on one-on-one for what I hope could still happen, a documentary on his life. It's a bit on standby right now, but, and he was, because it was something that he'd agreed on, it was not like a press conference, you know, or an interview for ESPN or BT or that kind of stuff. It was something about him that he was a big part of. He was really relaxed and it was something. And, you know, he's from Marseille. I this is not the kind of stuff that I like usually, but it was amazing.
I wasn't really going to ask this question, but it's just something that's come into my mind. Now you talk about Marseille. How big is the rivalry between Paris Saint-Germain, Lyon and Marseille? Because being from, you know, from England, and we probably don't realise how big that and intense that atmosphere and rivalry is. How big really is it?
It's huge. It's huge. But, you know, it's not secret that it was so fabricated by the media at the time, because obviously the two cities are so far apart. It's not a derby in the pure sense of the word. But there was a time where they were the two best teams. And you just had everything there. He was ready to build that rivalry and to construct it and to make it really heated and stuff. And then when they did that at the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, almost if like people had been waiting for it. And then he just went mad, crazy, on the pitch, tackles, hatred. And at the time, the French national team was basically made of pretty much almost half of Marseille players, half of PSG players, and they hated each other. And that's why in the early 90s, we had no success whatsoever, end of the 90s, early, because the atmosphere was so bad within the national team because of that rivalry.
Yeah.
And on the pitch, it was crazy. Off the pitch, it was off the scale. I mean, the fight and everything between the two sets of fans. It was so toxic. It was big for French football because it was like, okay, this is it. You know, this is what we also have to offer, that huge rivalry, you know, Bernard Tapie and Canal Plus owning the two clubs, all those great players that you had in both teams. And then they would one finish first, second, all, you know, pretty much all the time. Marseille dominated for a long time, and then PSG were probably in the 94, 95, the best team in France, 90, even going to 96. So, it was great. And I don't know if the Liverpool-Man United rivalry is a bit similar in the sense that there was a time where that rivalry didn't exist. Mm. And then it got created. And obviously, you know, what Sir Alex Ferguson said when he said, I want to knock them off the perch. I think that also brought that even more into the public eyes. Like, okay, and it was, then that was big again. So, but yeah, it's huge. And there's really the hatred and the tension, all of that is great. But yeah, I think it's good to have. But it's not as authentic in a way than the Lyon Saint-Etienne or the Everton Liverpool, you know, or even the
derby. Yeah,
the real derby, the same city, or at least, you know, two counties close to each other, that kind of rivalry.
So finally, the podcast is centered around going the match. So with every podcast we're doing, I want to end by asking, what are your top three favourite matches you've ever been to or seen?
Oh, wow.
No particular order.
Yeah, so there's been a lot. I can do work and as a fan all together, yeah? One of them has to be the PSG win against Barcelona. There's two. There's one against Real Madrid in 93 in that UEFA Cup game as well. That 4-1 win was incredible, and I had school the next day. this was this was one of the greatest nights ever at the Parc des Princes. And same was the PSG Barcelona game in 95, the second leg again, the 2-1 win against Pep's team and Cruyff's team. So I would go for the PSG Barcelona team as one. The other one has to be the France-Brazil quarterfinals of the World Cup in 2006 in Germany, because that day Zidane was, I think, the best individual performance I've ever seen, in all the games that I've covered or watched or where I was there. He was on another planet that day. And we're talking, you know, this was a Brazilian team that won the World Cup 4 years before, that had Roberto Carlos and Ronaldo and Rivaldo. And this was, it was still a really good Brazil team.
Yeah.
But that game, and France won 1-0, it's an assist from Zidane on a free kick for Thierry Henry. But he was just incredible. Like really, really, we're talking like... be there, I think it was Frankfurt.
He had
to be there and watching. You know, and every time... And I was doing the ratings for Le Parisien for that game. And I think he got 9 out of 10. And we were very close to giving him 10 out of 10. But we never gave 10 out of 10. So we gave 9. But, you know, you're watching and he does something. You go, oh, wow, okay. And then, like, I don't know, 2 minutes later, he does something even better. And you're like... First touch or a piece of skill or an amazing diagonal. I don't know, something special. You go, okay. That 15 minutes was special. But then the next 15 minutes is even more special. And then the next 15 ones. And then the next, and then the whole 90 minutes, it was just unplayable. And I was like, wow. So Zidane has that game, that France-Brazil 06 has to be there.
Zidane was absolutely incredible. It's almost like he had hands on his feet. Where his feet were hands. Like it was incredible. Like he had the ball on the string. That's the way I always remember watching him when I was younger. It was like the ball was always stuck to his foot. It was just like he could put it wherever he wanted it.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, there was at times he could have scored more goals, probably given more assist. And, you know, and the numbers, if you just look at the numbers, are not great. And there's all those red cards. I think it's 14. You know, all that, the aggression that he had in him, that red card in the 06 final. And, you know, so, of course, things with the talent that he had, he could have done better, I guess. But like everybody else, you know, we could all do better. But on his day, really, when he turned it on, it was just incredible. So that has to be there. And then the third one, I will go for the 2011 Champions League final, the Barca-Man United at Wembley. Because I've seen Barca play. I mean, every game Barca played in England since 2004 when I moved over here, I was there, apart from the Liverpool semi-final, the 4-0 win where I could not go. I was supposed to, but I had a bad back, so bad I could not move out of bed. So you see, I watched on TV, but yeah, I would go for that one because, again, I talked about Zidane and one of the best individual performances I've ever seen. I think collectively that final,
yeah,
I mean, they were out of this world. They were so good. And I think United got maybe the tactics wrong, but also because Barca were too good anyway. But the way Messi and Xavi and all those players played that night, I mean, it was 3-1. It could have been 6-0 and there would have been no debate whatsoever. They were so good. And to see Messi at that level, and again, I was lucky enough to watch Messi live maybe, I don't know, 10, 12 times. And it's always, always quite special. But that night was, yeah, it was good. So I'll go PSG Barcelona 95 in the Champions League. I would go France-Brazil 06 in the World Cup. And I would go Barca-Manchester United in the Champions League 11.
I think that's a fantastic way to finish the podcast, talking about Man United getting beat in the final. So,
yeah, I knew you'd be happy with that too. So, you know.
Just before you go, just a massive thank you for giving up your time today and coming on. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure, man. Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed that episode and want to keep notified for future episodes, please make sure you subscribe, follow and share. And of course, leave us a 5-star rating. You can now follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, all at Go in the Match, to keep updated for future episodes and updates on the podcast.